Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be Mike Gregg. This is another midweek Q&A with Mike, as this episode centers around your questions and topics for Mike to discuss that you submitted to the Cottage Talk Twitter and Facebook pages. On top of that, I have some topics for Mike to discuss as well. However, we have to start the show by discussing the comments from Savisi Yokanovic at his presser today, which were explosive. We have a ton to get through in this episode, but before I do anything, I have to welcome back Mr. Gregg. Mike, it's been a while. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. I'm good. I hope everyone's had a good Christmas and New Year. And we're all feeling good, weren't we, after Tuesday? And then, as usual, we're brought back down to ground today. But looking forward to doing the show. Disappointed I've missed so many shows this year, but work and other commitments. But hopefully 2018, I'll be back on the show if you invite me more, Russ.
I certainly will, Mike. I'm so happy to talk to you today. Unfortunately, we have to start with Slavisa's presser. And as I mentioned, there are some explosive comments that came from it. And I'm going to read from Ryan O'Donovan's article from Get West London. He wrote several articles on this. We're going to start with the one that has quotes from Slavisa. It is entitled Exclusive. Slavisa Jokanovic tells Fulham to back him or sack him amid furious transfer row. The head coach launched a furious tirade during his pre-Southampton press conference about the strength of his side and the transfer window. So now I'm going to go down, Mike, and I'm going to read the quotes to you. Here they are. Speaking to Get West London, he said, Jokanovic, quote, "No, this January, I'm really disappointed with the information around us. We don't have any clear targets, and for the direction of the club, I have some information that we are strong enough to fight for the important targets. I don't believe this. At the end, there are so many assistants and so many things. I'm really disappointed with our situation, and I expect the club will change their opinion. I don't know if we don't have the money or don't want to spend the money, but we are not competitive enough for this period with what is in front of us. Solution? I don't know. But probably if the coach doesn't trust that we are strong enough," and this is in brackets, "but they feel we are," also in brackets, "then probably an option that the club must be thinking about is sacking the coach, and this can be a good option for the club." All right, Mike, those are quotes from Slavisa. Like I mentioned, they are explosive. I just want to get your initial reaction to hearing those quotes.
When it sort of came up during the afternoon, my initial reaction was, oh no, not again. Because, I checked. Yes, it's definitely a transfer window. And yes, it's Jokanovic saying the same things that he said this month, in January, last summer, the January before that, the summer before that. And
And he did it at Watford too, by the way.
Yeah, he did do it at Watford, and we've spoken about that on the show. And, he is a coach at the club. He's been a coach everywhere else he's been. He's never had control of transfers as such. How much input he's had is questionable wherever he's been. It's questionable here as well, possibly. But, we've had a good run. We've had a good Christmas. We're on a good run of form the last 10 games. Had a great result and a great performance on Tuesday.
Absolutely.
And we're all buzzing for the FA Cup. And then he comes and says this again. And it's just disappointing. He may be frustrated with what's going on. He may well have been told that, there's not going to be any signings. There's no money. You've got enough players. But he is the coach and he's employed by the club. And okay, so, I've seen fans today saying, he's doing the right thing. He's getting the club. He's making it public that the club aren't going to spend any money and all this kind of thing. Well, we've seen him do it before, and then the club do go and spend money. And also, there's contradictions in Ryan's article that he says he's written as it was said by Jokanovic. Yep. So if you sort of break it down, in the programme last week, we had Shahid Khan, and we've also had other press conferences from Jokanovic saying, we've got players targeted coming up. Now he's suddenly saying we haven't got anyone. So he says we don't have any clear targets for the direction of the club. I mean, what does that mean? Targets for players? Is that targets for you know, points? Is it a promotion? You know what? And then he says, I have some information that we're strong enough to fight for the important targets. What does that mean? So he knows there's players out there that we can get. And then it's, I don't believe this. At the end, there are so many assistants and so many things. I'm really disappointed with our situation, and I expect the club will change their opinion. Change your opinion on what? So they are going to back you, are they? So why are you, you know, ranting as you are today?
Yeah.
And then the last part where he says, solution, I don't know, but probably if the coach doesn't trust that we are strong enough, but they feel we are, then probably an option that the club must be thinking about is sacking the coach. So what's he saying? We're not going to give you any money. So he thinks they're going to sack him because of that. It's just it's a mishmash.
Yeah.
You know, and if you read, you know, it was a rant. That's the sort of way Ryan describes it as well. And
absolutely.
It's so frustrating for the fans and everyone. And it doesn't matter whether you're Kanovic fan, whether you support what the Khans are doing. You just want your club to be pulling in the same direction. That's all I want. You know, I'm a little bit lucky. I get to see a bit of the inside through the FST and the meetings we have. And we were told last month that there is money available in January. It's unlikely we're going to go really mad. You know, I don't expect, you know, I've been saying to everyone, you know, if we can get two or three in, you know, that's what I consider will be, you know, enough. You know, everyone can say, oh, we need four or five. But realistically, if we get two or three in, then that's what I'm expecting. And the main thing is if we can keep the other players. And, you know, and then you have the Fredericks thing as well today, where there's a rumour that Stoke have offered money for him and maybe and the club are considering it. And then you have to have that kind of discussion. You know, there's a player out of contract in the summer. Do you let him walk? Do you say, no, we're not selling you. We'll let you walk for nothing in the summer. You know, so there's lots of things going on. And it's just, like I say, it's repetitive. It's frustrating. It puts us in a bad light. And I just want Tony Khan, Alistair McIntosh, Jokanović to sit in a room together.
I totally agree,
mate. Mediate. I'll get anyone to go and mediate. Sit in the room and say, what's the bloody problem? You know, Jokanović, you've got a contract. You're the head coach. Other people sign the players. You have an input, allegedly, yes or no. And if you don't like that, and as much as I like Jokanović and the style of football we're playing, I do not want him to leave. But that's his job spec. That's how he's employed by the club. And if you don't like it, walk. Don't be looking to get the sack so you get compensation, because that's one thing that looks like. That last comment, that's what he's almost saying is, you know, they're going to sack me, so, you know, I'm not going to walk. It's just, you know, if the conditions are so bad, if you're finding it that frustrating, then, you know, he'd get a job elsewhere. But like I said, I don't want him to go. I just want the powers that be to sit down and all sing from the same bloody hymn sheet at a time where we're, you know, just on the run, which could possibly, we could be in the playoffs by the end of February, you know, and you know, just shooting ourselves in the foot again.
I totally agree, Mike. And what's interesting about all of this is that I'm one that truly believes that all of this should be behind the scenes, that they should all get in a room, like you said, and talk and keep it amongst themselves. It shouldn't be out in the public like it is. And this is what Jokanović does. Unfortunately, he's done this several times, Mike. In fact, there's a follow-up article that Ryan wrote. It's an opinion piece. It's called Another Transfer Window, Another Outburst. This has to stop for the sake of Fulham. This is Ryan's opinion about the whole thing. And I'm just going to read a portion from it because I find it interesting. I want to get your thoughts on his thoughts on this. This is from Ryan Persson, Ryan's thoughts on this. He writes, Slavisa Jokanović launched an explosive tirade in today's press conference, but the manager versus recruitment debate must stop for the sake of Fulham. And then he goes into his article and he actually gives you the point of view. I'm not going to go through the entire article of Slavisa, and also from Tony Khan and the recruitment department about the issues of the transfer window. He goes through it. He does a very nice job. So I recommend everyone reading this article. And also in the article, Ryan mentions that it's quite possible, I'm paraphrasing, that Slavisa uses the media to get his point across. And it seems like that. So I wish that they would keep everything under wraps. And like you said, Mike, everyone get in a room. But here's the end of Ryan's article that I want to get your thoughts on, because I think it speaks to how I feel about this. This is what Ryan wrote in his article. It's disgraceful that this has been allowed to play out again during a transfer window. Whether it's a lack of communication from both sides or just a disagreement, this is becoming the norm in the transfer window and is creating an image that Fulham are a club in crisis behind the scenes. Someone, whether that be Jokanović or Tony Khan, needs to take the initiative here and stop the wheels, as it were. Having this kind of stuff come up every transfer window is not good for the image of the club. It shouldn't be that hard to do. Other football clubs seem to be able to find the balance between keeping the manager happy and using a recruitment team. So why are Fulham finding it so difficult? All right, Mike. Those are some words from Ryan O'Donovan, and it goes to my feeling on this. Get in a room, work it out, figure out a common ground, and keep it to yourself. It doesn't need to be out in the press, and make the club look like it is right now, which is foolish. And I don't want Fulham to be looking foolish, Mike, but they do look foolish here.
Yeah, well, they do, and that's the thing. And why should an employee have to go public and make these points? I mean, I've said before, Motspur Park is not that big. It's a small building. They pass each other if they're both in the building on the same day. You know, there really is no need for this. And, you know, in the end, he's employed. And, you know, what he's saying is, if I was his boss, you know, I'd be hauling him over the coals, because you should not be talking like this. You've got issues, you deal with it in-house. And
exactly.
Yeah, you know, is it good for Fulham? No, absolutely not. It's not good for him. It's not good for the fans. And in the end, the club is bigger than, from a fan's point of view, the club is bigger than players, managers, and owners, because one, they all come and go. And, you know, but we have to live through all this, you know, absolutely stupid stuff, really. I just want them to resolve it. And, you know, it'd be good if Tony Khan or someone come out from the non-playing side,
yep,
from the board, and explain, you know, what the situation is. We keep asking them at the FST meetings. They give us the responses, and we come back and we say nothing has changed, even with Klein leaving. You know, they still have the policy of the sort of transfer committee in that sense, and where everyone has to agree, which I personally don't have too much of an issue with. But it's clear that, you know, there's mixed messages behind the scenes. You know, you have Shahid Khan, as I said in the programme notes, saying we're going to, you know, there is sufficient funds, and I was being told in meetings there are funds. And then you have the coach today saying there isn't any money. So somewhere there's a disconnect, and it will play itself out, I'm sure, but we could have done without it, and it's just the timing. And
timing's terrible, Mike.
Yeah, I don't want to put blame on anyone, really. You know, you can blame the owners and Tony if they're not ready, but really, you know, Jokanović, for the good of the club, should not be saying this in public at this time. Like I say, I just wish they could sort it out behind the scenes, because there's only going to be one winner, really, and that's going to be the owners.
Right.
Because, you know, they're not going to just walk off and leave. You know, there'll only be one person leaving, and that'll be Jokanović.
Right,
and we're
going to
be worse off if that happens.
Exactly, Mike. That's why I think it's worth, and I'm sure they've done this, but they need to be on the same page, and that's what's bothering me. They need to all be on the same message to get Fulham where they need to be. And if you have someone using the press, and I think Slavisa is an incredible coach. I think he's done a fantastic job. But this is something that I cannot approve of what he's doing, because he's using the press to get this message across, hoping this will change the minds of whatever he has been told by venting like this. And I just wish that instead of doing that, get in a room, like you said, work it out, figure it out, and then move on. It shouldn't be at a press conference. It just shouldn't be. Obviously, you know, that's not where this should be. It should be behind closed doors. It should not be at a presser. That's my feelings on that, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We shouldn't be having this discussion. It's just so disappointing. And I was trying to wrap my brains. I'm pretty sure it was it may have been this time last year as well, or even earlier in this season, when we'd either had a good result or a decent run and everyone's buoyant, and then we just get shot down again, and it just deflates you, and it puts fan against fan, well, which is the worst thing. You know, I'm sat here doing this show, I'm looking at TweetDeck and I can see my notifications going down, and I'm looking at people in arguments at each other. It's just really depressing. And like I say, Jokanović, I wish he could have just, you know, bit his tongue today, go and deal with it off site and not raised it, because, you know,
he has a track record of doing this.
From him.
This is what he's done.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Yeah. Okay, Mike, I wanted to ask you before we get into some more topics about a tweet from Ryan O'Donovan that also came from the presser. Ryan actually tweeted this out about Ryan Fredericks. You had mentioned that earlier in the show, that the speculation linking him to Stoke City. Well, here is Ryan's tweet, and it's interesting because it not only involves Fredericks, but also talks about the Fulham players in general. This is what Ryan O'Donovan tweeted earlier today. Also been told there's been no bid from Stoke for Ryan Fredericks. Fulham have no intention to sell any of their players this window. All right, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on that, because obviously Ryan Fredericks is out of contract, so I understand why a team would come in from him, but I find it interesting that according to Ryan O'Donovan, there's been no bid yet. But the bigger point for me is the point about he's hearing that Fulham have no intention of selling any of their players.
Well, I mean, there is no need to sell, and it's, I'm sure there's a couple of players who will get moved on. But if you're talking about the main playing squad, no, I don't think there's any requirement to sell anyone. The Fredericks one, I think, initially came from a Northern reporter. And, it does get a discussion going. I mean, he is a...
Sure.
It's very odd, because if you look at the contracts that a lot of our players have now, they're on quite long ones. They've renewed. But Fredericks is the one that stands out as not having been extended. There was talk earlier in the season, before the season began, that they were talking about a new contract. Then it stalled. Then there was something, I think, sometime in beginning of December, where they said they were back talking about it. But nothing since then. And now you possibly, you know, there is a bid for him from a team that's struggling at the bottom of the Premier League. And that's where the bids are going to come from.
Sure.
For the players in the top half of the Championship. The teams at the bottom half of the Premier League are going to be looking for, you know, for players they can pick up to try and make a difference. It's an interesting one, though. I've had a few discussions on Twitter about it today. If it was £3 million on the table for him and he has no intention of signing a contract, do you take the money? Then you have to look at another player coming in, or is there someone in the squad? Well, obviously, Adoree can go straight in at right back, but then you know, you lose him as backup at left back and in central defence as well. So it's a tricky one, and it's very easy for us all to say, yeah, we'll let him stay and then we'll let him go for a free. But if we don't go up, that's £3 million you've lost. Yes, if we go up, we can take the hit. That's not a problem. And if we go up, he'll probably want to stay. And then, of course, you have the situation where, well, if there is a club wanting him and he wants to go and we say no, you then have a disgruntled player for 20 games of the season. So, it's a horrible position to be in. And I'm glad I'm not the one who has to make the decision if there is an offer on the table. But it is good news. Going back to the Jokanović and what he's saying, if the club are then saying we have no intention of selling anyone, then that's good news.
Absolutely.
So, I go back to the sort of mixed messages that we're getting there.
Yeah, it's a conundrum, Mike. This whole thing, it's a puzzle with Savisa, and then of course, like you said, this situation, which is interesting with Fredericks, and you really showed all the different angles to this, because I could see why the club would consider taking the money and then trying to find someone else, or I could also see why that they would stick with him and see where it takes us. So it's a interesting situation, and yeah, I'm glad I'm not the one making these decisions, honestly, because I would be doing it too much with my heart, and sometimes you have to do a combination of heart, but also with business sense, and that's an interesting one to consider. So, but like I mentioned, according to Ryan O'Donovan, Fulham have no plans of selling any of their players, and for me, that's good news. All right, Mike, I have a couple questions for you, and then we have about five questions from the Fulham supporters. So I'm going to limit it to two because we spent a good amount of time talking about the presser today. So here's my first one, and this is one that I think all fans want to know, and I actually want to know because I don't have the answer. Mike, how are Fulham doing points-wise this season compared to last season after 26 matches?
Yeah, so those who follow me on Twitter know I do a lot of this stat stuff. I mean, currently we're 10th, 26 games played, 39 points, and we're 4 points behind sixth place. But a year ago, at this stage, we'd actually had the Reading game postponed. So we'd played 25 and had 39 points and were eight. So, you know, but we were 6 points behind with a game in hand, admittedly. So we're virtually at the same position we were a year ago, except there are a couple more teams involved in that. In that sort of, you know, top half of the table, top 10. I would say anyone in the top 12 has potentially the chance to get in the playoffs, I would say. Whereas last year, I thought the table started reducing at this stage, you know, to about 10 maybe. So there's just a couple more teams involved. The table, sort of, if you compare it position for position, is very similar apart from Wolves. I mean, they're running away. But, you know, last year we had Brighton as well. They're, you know, you have Derby and Cardiff and Bristol City. They're all sort of swapping places a little bit at the moment. So more teams involved in the playoffs at the moment. So that gives us a good chance. The interesting stat I came across was the next four games. If we get 8 points in the next four games, then we'll be in a better position than we were last year at 30 games. So that should be our sort of target. We need to improve on what we did last year, bank some more points earlier, and then we won't have to have such a great run at the end of the season. But, you know, you've only got to look back to the Brentford game. Pretty much everyone thought we were dead and buried then. You know, that was it. Forget it. We're not doing anything. And even I was beginning to lose my doubts. But it goes back to what I was saying earlier. We've had 10 games, got 20 points from it. Yeah. And, you know, that's top two position type form over a full season. And you just wish we could keep that momentum going without these silly bloody hiccups. But, we're basically where we were, and the question is, can we maintain the form? We don't necessarily need to fully repeat what we did last year, but we need to be bloody close to it.
Very interesting there, Mike. All right, and to kind of go off on that, this is just your opinion, because you mentioned there are more teams involved right now. So which teams do you feel are Fulham's competition to end the season six? Because let's just focus on getting six. What teams do you think are the biggest stumbling blocks to getting to sixth place? Who do you fear the most?
I think you've got to look at, rival-wise, what you've got to do first is remove the teams who we're not going to reach out to, because I think sixth is going to be the position we need to get to. Although everything is close, maybe fifth, but I do think sixth is it we're going to aim for and get like we did last year. So you're going to take Wolves out of it. I would take Derby and Cardiff out. Bristol City, is an odd one, even though they're on the same number of points as Cardiff. I'm still not convinced Bristol City are good enough. You know, I still think they've got some bad, you know, the bad result the other day. I think potentially they're the team that could, you know, fall off a cliff potentially. But they have got a good number of points banked. But I think Bristol City maybe they could fall away. Then you've got Aston Villa, who I think will be in the playoffs as well. Leeds, Sheffield United, Middlesbrough. I expect Middlesbrough to get there. And then us. So I'm expecting Leeds and Sheffield United to fall off. So really, our real rivals, if you like, it's getting Middlesbrough and Leeds. I think we need to be. If we finish above Middlesbrough and Leeds, we'll be in the playoffs.
Okay.
One of those. If we finish above one of those teams, because, like I say, I think Bristol City are going to disappear. So. Yeah, it's going to come, as long as it doesn't come down to one of the last games of the season. But, you know, that's who I see. I don't see Preston. I don't see Brentford or Ipswich or Norwich or anyone, any of those guys. Yeah. It's pretty much everyone above us. Preston will drop off. Yeah. Leeds. I think it's going to be Leeds, between us and Leeds again.
That's what I think. I think it's going to be Leeds United again. I think that's going to be the team that we should be looking at, that we beat out last season. Hopefully it happens again, Mike. Before we get to our Q&A part of the show, I have to ask this, because I've seen this a great deal on social media. It's something that has been an interest to me. We always focus on the business of Fulham. I have to ask about the business of Wolves. How are they able to do what they're doing, Mike?
So we're talking about how much money they're spending, aren't we?
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah, so the main thing is you have to remember where Wolves have been. If you look at, you know, they've been in a championship for a while now, and, you know, they have sold a couple of players in the past for quite decent money, but their actual profit and loss, you know, they've made a profit. I think it was two seasons ago, maybe. So they pretty much stayed in the championship without doing too much and balanced the books. And then because of the way financial fair play works, they spent some money last year, but they were still able to spend a lot of money this year as well, which is what they've done. And because their base level, if you like, of expenditure was probably as low as it could possibly be over the last 2 years. So using the 3-year rule of financial fair play, where you can lose up to 39 million, they've bet the house, if you like, I think, on this year. And it's paying dividends. But that's because they've been cut to the bone, if you like, over the last couple of years. And they made a profit 2 years ago. So you know, that's given them a lot of leeway. So I know lots of people say, well, how can Wolves do it? How can they spend all this money? You know, what about finance? Because they played the game. They've stripped themselves to the bone. We haven't done that, and we are, if we don't go up, I do believe we will have problems next year and going forward, because we will have to, straight away next year, first day of the new financial year, we lose, you know, 10 million plus straight away, because there's no more parachute payments. So
right.
It's all right saying the best bit of real estate we have is Session on, and let's hope we can sell him for 50 million. But there's no guarantee on that. You know, the poor guy could break his leg tomorrow. You know, no one knows. So that's how Wolves have been able to do it anyway.
Okay.
Good accounting, basically.
And they have obviously the connections to get the players, and that has helped too. But financially, we're talking about, that's what I wanted to know about, Mike. So thank you.
They're going through one agent, aren't they? They're using that principle of
it seems so.
Know, one agent. So that's So they're sort of using that club, if you like, for that agency. I mean, Bolton tried it a few years ago as well, and some other clubs have done that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And maybe that's one way of reducing fees, because, you know, if you like, they're keeping it all in house. But yeah, I mean, they are blowing away the league this year, and you know, they will be champions. But then we'll see them struggle next year in the Premier League. But
yeah.
But they bided their time and they've timed it just right.
Okay, and they're obviously going to get promoted and probably win the league, and so they probably played it right. But they bet on themselves, like you said, Mike. They set themselves up because, like you said, they got themselves down to bare bone, and then they were able to spend, and they have spent big, and it's paying off. All right, Mike, it's time for some questions for you. This one comes from Twitter. It's actually from John Quinn, and it's an interesting question. Here it is. Mike, I think that our home crowd are too quick to boo and jeer our players nowadays. Do you share my view, and has it been like this historically?
Oh, I've spoken and written about this recently. I think it's the modern way, really. We are too quick to boo. I mean, there were people booing on Tuesday, not a huge amount, but, you know, booing at half time because we'd gone one down. And I've been critical of the fans, you know, even sitting around me at times. And, you know, because I don't know what they expect some of the time. Do they expect every player to be perfect and for us to be 4-0 up at half time and stuff like that? I think it's the modern sort of, God, I'm going to sound like an old man now. It's like the modern sort of championship manager, must have everything now type world that we live in. You know, on the computer games on FIFA, you can change the team straight away, sell a player, buy a new player. You've looked at his stats and he's straight in the team and it makes a difference. And, you know, negotiating transfers on Football Manager is fairly easy. In the real world, it isn't. And modern technology. We must have everything now. I want it now. You know, why can't you deliver it tomorrow? You know, it's that type of thing. And we expect instant results. Media, every game is hyped. And with social media now, we're forever talking. You know, I'm as guilty as anyone. We're forever talking about our sports. You do the same in America. We do the same here. Which, you know, it's. But at Craven Cottage, especially over the last 2 or 3 years, I think the relegation and being in the Championship and the change of owner and everything over the last few years, having been at the Europa Cup final and everything that went with Roy, and then we've seen that peter off. I think there's frustration. A lot of it is frustration, really. That, you know, we're not back in the Premier League and we're not winning every game. But I do feel that fans, and it's not only at the Cottage, you see it when you go to other games and you hear it on TV, they're just not patient. And I do think another aspect of it is our style of play. At its best, and you watched the game the other night, I take it.
Yes, I did.
You know, we blow teams away. But even at 4-1, the guy behind me on 85 minutes is moaning because we've got the ball and we're not poofing it up front. You know, a lot of fans literally really do not like the style we play. Or, you know, they want a big man. They want Matt Smith up front and lob the ball in. You know, and I know I get criticised for saying that all the time, but that's what some fans want. And for me, that's, you know, I'm not interested in that at all. But I do think it is the modern way. It's frustration, but Craven Cottage crowd, since McGaff, I think we go back to McGaff with the youngsters.
Okay.
When some of our youngsters were absolutely crucified and it wasn't their fault. And even some of the ones like, you know, Matt O'Reilly, who played in the cup game at home, you know, 16 years old, made a couple of mistakes. He's not ready. He shouldn't be in the team. Well, it's not his fault. You know, the manager's picked him, and, you know, support the guys. I totally agree with John. That Craven Cottage is very difficult, and I think that's been reflected in our results until recently, where, you know, we've won 4 on the trot, haven't we, at home now? But there was a case there where, last, if we weren't up or we went a goal down, you could see. Hear it in the fans' voices and see it on the pitch as well. You can see the reaction. And, we just need to be more patient and just accept that these players, they're human. They're going to make mistakes. And,
right.
But just support the team, you know.
Okay, very interesting.
Unfortunately,
Glad that you talked about that, Mike. I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just interesting that I were talking about this because now I have a question. You were talking about the striker position. I have a question about the striker position going along with what you're talking about, style of play. Yavor Alexiev actually has this on Facebook. These are our questions to you on Facebook. Hey, do you think we should go for a plan B striker such as Smith, an automatic starter such as Gale, or both? And where does that leave Font? With Kamara in form and new strikers potentially on the horizon, not to mention our preferred false nines, I can't see him getting game time anytime soon. That's talking about Font. All right, Mike. Yavor wants you to talk about the striker position. Your thoughts?
Okay, well, I mean, Font hasn't worked out, has he? But what do? You're going to give up on him now? You know, we're going to send him back. If we do, then, yeah, you know, if we can send him back on loan, you're going to give up on him straight away. Then you have to go and get another striker. Kamara, you know, it goes back to patience, isn't it? Kamara written off after two games. He's rubbish. Worst, you know, you read some of the forums, he's the worst player we've ever had. What complete rubbish that is. He's not, you know, he's not a world beater, but he's a useful striker to have. Font, I think we've got to find the right position for him. I think he would work in a two-man up front, possibly. I would like to see him and Kamara together, actually, occasionally, even if it is the last 20 minutes as a plan B. But will we go for a striker? Well, you know, Gale was a sort of last-minute offer that we made, which didn't quite work out. Will we go back for him? Well, I think he's getting more playing time now at Newcastle, but he is a striker who would certainly add to us. And then you've had the other rumours about a certain Chris Martin and that type of thing. But you know, I'm not convinced that Jokanović wants a Plan B striker in the sense he wants a big man up top. I think he just wants a striker who can consistently score goals, and Gale has shown that he does that. Everyone knows my favourite striker, but he's not doing anything at the moment. Might be worth picking him up. Who knows? But it goes back to the conversation we had at the beginning. You know, you've got a manager there saying we're not going to sign anyone, but. You know, I do think we will try and bring in a striker and a centre back.
I agree.
This window, who it will be, we will have to wait and see. But it's all pointing towards Gale. But yeah. I'm not convinced he's going to come down a division because he's playing now.
Yes.
Looking around the other leagues, I did. You know, I'd look at who's playing, who's scoring. You know, and you look at it and you go. Are they really going to leave to come to us? Because they're doing quite well, you know. Nearly all the best players, I was looking at the Championship, and I was struggling to see any players in the bottom half I'd be interested in, I have to say. You know, Redden are struggling. Is there anyone there you'd want? You know, any of their defenders? Yeah. Sheffield Wednesday, could you pick any of theirs up? You know, these are the players you... probably got to be looking at, or teams you got to be looking at, because they're not going to be in the playoffs. We can offer that, right. Possibly. So, you know, Wednesday got a lot of strikers. Maybe
I was going to say, possibly Sheffield Wednesday, Mike. They have several options there.
Well, I think they might have to save some money as well, because they've spent a bit in the last couple of years.
They did.
And they're not going to go up this year. So it might be worth a cheeky bid if there's a player or two that... We want from their
maybe
place.
You finally get your wish, Mike.
Who knows? I'll be buying a shirt the very day. But I don't see it happening, though, unfortunately. But
okay.
But yeah, so we will see. We will see who comes in. But I do expect us to get another striker, and I see Aiti's injured.
I do too.
But then we've had Piazon come back. So there's lots of options.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. All right, here's a question from Roger Lewis. This is a good one for you, Mike. Can Mike clarify the situation with loan players? How many can a club sign, and how many can be in a matchday squad?
Well, certainly the matchday squad is five. So in the 18, you can name five. All five can be on the pitch at the same time as well. As to the maximum you can actually sign, I I think I read somewhere it's 8, but it could be 10 as well. But there is a limit, I know that, but it's somewhere around that kind of number. So we have room still to sign one or two. But the interesting question is, you've got Callis on loan, and you've got Norwood on loan, you've got Piazon on loan. So you soon start, you know, thinking, well, you've got Ojo on loan. That's 4. And so we had Soares on the bench the other day, who I must admit I was surprised to see him there, because I would have expected him to play more by now. So the question is, if you're going to bring in a loanee, they have to be someone who's really going to go straight into the team and, you know, to make that kind of difference. Because we saw the other day, Norwood, you know, is a decent player at this level. I would expect him to be in every 18, and the same with the other guys I mentioned. You know, I never thought, I'll be honest, I never thought a year ago we'd all be going, oh yeah, Piazza, I'm really glad he's back. We need him in the 18. But, you know, he's a useful player. And so,
yes.
Yeah, I think we've got room for one loanee, but he has to be no more bits and pieces players. He needs to be a starter. So
okay.
When you look at the team, where can they start? And it would be centre-back or left-back, maybe.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. All right, I just want to mention Andrew Iliffe wanted you to talk about the situation with the recent article about Savisa. We've already done that, so Andrew, just listen to the beginning of the show. Then our co-host, Emilio Danilo, has a question for you, Mike. What's your standout moment of the season so far?
Well, that's a good one.
that's a good question.
No, that is a very, very good question. Standout moment of the season. Have we got another question? Let me think about that one for a second.
Sure.
And I will, yeah.
You want to go back to that, Mike?
That one. But,
okay,
yeah,
no problem.
I'll come back to that one. I'll let Emilio wait for that.
Okay. Well, Colm Bugler has a question for you. Probably been asked before. What position is more important to fill in the transfer window? Center half or center forward?
Center back, yeah. Center back, definitely. I think we can get away with the strikers in some ways. And, you know, because we play with one man up top and wingers, if you like, who move around. You can talk about false nines, and I don't think Johansson should ever play in that position. Centre-back.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. All right, Gary Cooper has a question for you. Simple question for Mike. On the pitch, does he think we are progressing, regressing, or stuck in the middle this season? People saying we're an average team this season compared to last season. Why haven't we kicked on? Could it be too much was expected of the players this season compared to the start of last season, when we were expected to be in a relegation battle? Did we overachieve?
No, I don't think we overachieved last year. You know, we made the playoffs. We were the best team for, you know, 30 games last year, really, for the last 30 games. I think we had a bad preseason. I think the playoffs messed up the planning, and that's why it all seemed a bit of a mess before the season began. I know if David Hulley was still listening to this show, he would say to me, let Malone and Aluko go.
Yeah.
I don't think they've had that much of an effect. I think the biggest issue we've had this year is Kearney not being fully fit.
I agree.
Quite frankly. And the fact that the, you know, I call them the three musketeers, but the fact that Kearney, Johansson and McDonald haven't really been able to play together until recently. And it's noticeable that, you know, we're on a 10 games, we've got 20 points. And that's when those three guys have mainly been able to play, because they're the guys who make the team tick. And so I do believe we are one of the best sides. I don't think because of the way we play, the sort of passing out the back and the fact that defensively, you know, we're attacking a lot, so we leave ourselves exposed a little bit at the back. I've never thought we could be first or second. I said to you a lot on the show, I always saw us about being fourth.
Yeah.
And
you predicted that, I believe.
I'm absolutely, you know, yeah. And I am really disappointed with how the season's gone. We should have started a lot better. We have been fairly consistent. We had a bad little run, which has caused us to drop down the league. But I think, you know, we are now getting close to how well we were playing last year, and we're certainly form-wise there or thereabouts. So I don't see us regressing. I just think that maybe the second half of last season took so much out of us that, you know, there are a couple of players a bit jaded or injured at the beginning of the season. And then finally, I would say not getting a third centre-back to compete. So, yes, getting Callis back was good. Yes, Ream is fine for me. But we needed a third centre-back to compete with those two,
right,
push them, but also be available when, you know, to change things around or
right,
for injuries. So the fact that we failed to do that in the last window has always bugged me. And I think we have been found out a little bit by not having one. And hopefully the club will rectify that this window. And that's why it goes back to the previous question, bar one, is that what's more important, and for me, it is a centre-back.
Centre-back. I understand where you're going there, Mike. It's funny because I think it's easy to say either one, but I think a striker is needed, but I think it's not talked about enough how much Fulham need another centre-back. And we talked even recently on the show, Mike, that maybe Collis and Ream are too similar, and they need that partnership that you saw with Hanglin and Hughes, where you had two different types of centre-backs. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know if they're similar. I mean, one of the things about them is that they play the football that he wants us to play. I mean, you know, I was having a discussion the other day about Flint and Bristol City.
Yeah.
And yes, he's doing really well, and he is, you know, he's scoring lots of goals, which gets you lots of headlines. But he's a big lad, and would he be able to do what some of the, you know, what Ream and Callis do? And it's mainly Ream. If you look at any of these passing maps, the ball goes to Ream first before Callis. Ream is the out ball more than Callis. So, you know, think about Flint, who is whatever size he is. Picture him facing Bettinelli or Button with his on the edge of the 18-yard box, the ball being rolled out to him with a player coming down to hassle him. Has he got quick enough feet to, you know, not lose it and not put us in problems? You know, because we don't, although it's scary watching those guys kick the ball around at the back of the way they do, we don't concede that many goals from doing it. Most of the goals we concede, as we saw the other day, are from free kicks and corners,
it's horrible,
and rubbish
Mike.
Like that.
Horrible.
So you are, you know, so it does go back to sort of, you know, you ask me striker or centre back, and I'll go back to you and give you this, Russ.
Okay.
Last 10 games, I said to you, we got 20 points. Okay, so we have scored 21 goals in those 10 games, only bettered by Wolves, who scored 20. You know, no, actually, the same number. They scored 21 as well in 10 games. They conceded 5. We've conceded 15.
Oh, that's a big difference.
You know,
that's a huge difference.
Yeah. So for me, that's the issue. That's the difference to last year, is we're not, you know, we're conceding too many silly goals. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's to get the centre back who can play his style, I don't think is that easy. And I just think it's a difficult one. I looked at a list of centre backs today because I saw you were going to ask me a question about centre backs, but I
right.
can tell you now, I could not figure out which one we could go for or who we should get. So I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
Okay, but Mike, you bring up a good point. It's not just as easy is just saying, oh, give me Flint, because Flint might not fit into how Savisa wants him to play. So it's a great point. I see where you're going on center back, but it has to be a certain type of center back that can play that style. And if he can't, then it's not going to work anyways. And then you have all that money that you're probably going to have to spend on a center back. So it has to be the right one. It's a great point there, Mike. All right, we're going to end with Emilio's question for you. Okay, we're going back to that, Mike. Yeah. I'll say standout moment. It's funny because I was thinking about this. I'm going to throw in both Ipswich matches. I watch all the matches. I'm going to say both of them. And what's interesting about this, and I was talking to Giannis about this, can't put my finger on it, but there's something about playing against Mick McCarthy teams for Slavica that we have an advantage over that style for whatever reason. So I'm going to talk about, I'm going to say my standout moments were both of the Ipswich matches, but I'll go to you now.
Yeah, well, it's funny, and I know it's only 2 days ago, but I'm actually going to say Ipswich on Tuesday, I think, because that was the first, that was the first real game at home this year where we've entertained the crowd for virtually the whole game. And we played really well. And yes, they had a player sent off, but I was always confident we were going to score, maybe not four in 10 minutes or whatever it was, but... And I just feel that's possibly was the most memorable game of the season, and it's the hopefully a turning point in some ways.
Hopefully,
hopefully, yeah. And the belief, because I saw people who I know had written us off for the rest of the season suddenly going, oh well, maybe I've got that wrong. Maybe we do have a chance, and results have gone, you know. And then of course today we have it all kicked away from us, don't we? But But no, I'm going to go Ipswich, and I'm going to go Kamara, really. I'm so happy for the fact he scored
I am
two
too,
goals.
Mike. I am too.
So yeah, a bit of an easy cop-out there.
No, it's not, Mike.
2 days ago, but yeah.
It's not, but what's interesting about what you just said, and the reason why I'm laughing, is I did a show with Emilio a couple of hours after the match. He had just gotten back home. And I asked him what was his feeling right after the match, you know, after the final whistle. What were you thinking? And he said, you know, the word that came to my mind, belief. That's why I was laughing, Mike, because he said the same thing. He said he felt the belief after that victory. And I did too. It's very interesting. That's why that match was so huge. And that's why today is so deflating, Mike, with the situation with Slavica, because you come off that match feeling, okay, we have a chance now to really kick on. And then you kind of get a kick in the gut from what was happening today. So, but I find it interesting that you use that word and you went to that match, and we're in agreement on that match. All right, Mike, listen, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. Before we go, it's been a while. So I want to get your final thoughts and any thoughts heading forward for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think I'm not too bothered about Saturday. Some people say, it's the FA Cup. I think we've got a good chance Saturday. But more importantly, we've got, four games coming up where I hope we can get possibly 8 or 9 points from. And then we have a very hard February. So, it's all going to pan out whatever way. But... the next four games for me are crucial. I want us to be ahead of where we were last year. And of course, January, let's see if we do anything. I'm not expecting anything very quickly, but it's a key month, and results wise and transfer wise in some ways, because I'm fully expecting us to get a big bid for Session on as well. So, let's see if we can keep those Wolves at bay as well. The four games coming up are key for me.
Okay, excellent, Mike. Great show. Thank you so much for joining me, but it is time to go. For Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.